finals weekend at BT Murrayfield sees four great teams contest two huge matches.
The Champions Cup has a new name on it, and the name is Saracens.
The holders are in the European Rugby Champions Cup final once again.
Do not underestimate what Saracens have just achieved. They've come to Dublin and they've seen off Munster, who've been playing with inspiration this season, but not enough inspiration today to see off a mighty fine rugby team.
Sarries face a Clemmell side who knocked out Leinster.
In their long, drawn-out quest for European glory, for Clemmell to become the new Munster, they will go to Edinburgh in 2017. Will it be their pot of gold? France against England again.
On the EPCR European Rugby Show, we'll talk to three famous names about the Champions Cup final. Former Saracens man Jacques Berger and Clemmell old boy Lee Byrne, as well as the man in the middle, match referee Nigel Owens. Also, Gloucester's John Afoa joins us to look ahead to the European Rugby Challenge Cup final, which is another Anglo-French affair.
And Gloucester will be in the final.
The sun shines on Stade Français.
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm James Burridge. I'm joined by the multi-talented Newcastle, Northampton and Toulon fly half. See, that was a much better intro than last week. Tom May and EPCRugby.com's Emma Thurston to preview finals weekend at BT Murrayfield. So, Mr. Multi-talented, Tom May, have we got the best two teams in the final?
Thanks for your comments, first of all. I know, judging from your face, that you're joking. I think we do have the two best sides. I think, obviously, through other top competitions, no matter what the sport, sometimes you end up with the two best teams meeting in the semi-finals. But I think where Saracens are and Clermont are within their respective domestic leagues, it shows that they've been performing at a high level for a consistent amount of time throughout the season. And I think some of the qualities that they've shown during this European Champions Cup have been outstanding, both from both sides. Some outstanding players, and I think we're going to see a great final this weekend.
Emma, tens of thousands of people are going to be making their way to Scotland, to Edinburgh, for these two huge finals. They're talking about it already, aren't they, on social media?
As you'd expect in a finals week, social media is flying. On our Twitter page at Champions Cup and on our Facebook page at European Rugby Champions Cup, we ask you which player is going to be key in the European Champions Cup final. Stuart Lamberton on Facebook, he said Richard Wigglesworth will control the game and Saracens will win it. Graham White on Twitter, he also identified another Saracen, Mako Vunipola, he said, great in the scrum and a great ball carrier. We'll read out a few more during the course of the show and, of course, keep your Twitter and Facebook reaction coming in.
Well, let's get stuck in talking about that Champions Cup final this weekend. ASM Clemmell to van against the holders Saracens. BT Murrayfield Stadium, the venue, this Saturday. Kick-off at 5 o'clock local time. Tom, it's been billed as the brides against the bridesmaids in many ways, because both these teams, well, you look at Sarries, they have lost, but they've managed to turn the corner, and Clemmell haven't. So what can Clemmell learn from Saracens about making it all the way?
Well, they've had plenty of opportunity to learn in the past, haven't they? And perhaps they haven't. I think that's probably the worrying thing in the Clermont camp building up to this final, is that they've been at this stage before and they've found a way to lose. Having Lopez as a controlling factor at 10 and someone with a huge array of skills, Brock James was brilliant for them. But there are a couple of occasions when he shied away from taking drop goals and opportunities that presented themselves. And perhaps that feeling almost filtered down through the team. They're in a fantastic run of form. You just think, if you compare the two sides, the skills are there, and you know that they're fairly level from those two perspectives. It's how mentally they approach this game, and they need to block out all of those problems that they faced in the past.
You've been a player who's gone to finals before. How do you prepare for something as big as this?
I think the key is to get excited about it. You know, don't see it as something that's a big black cloud that's looming on the horizon, or it's a massive pressured occasion that you want to enjoy it. Firstly, you want to enjoy it with a group of mates that you've been through some tough times with, but also you've been through some great times with. You've had those great times to even be at this stage. I think you look forward to it. And that was certainly the way that all of the players that I played with, as soon as you know you're in a final, there's an excitement, there's a buzz about those weeks building up to it. And certainly the week before, there's a real feeling of excitement and really looking forward. Those players, they'll be desperate to get to Edinburgh now.
And if you're on the coach's corner of both these camps, if you're on the Clermont corner and you're looking at Saracens, where are their weaknesses? If they aren't going to slip up, where's it going to be?
Thanks for
checking
that my way.
Enjoy that question, Tom.
I think it's really difficult at the moment to find a weakness. Perhaps you can look at areas whereby they just boil over occasionally and perhaps they can get into certain players. But I think even now, that's really difficult. I think that the players have understood that they need to stay on top of their emotions, and discipline's a massive thing for each team to stay on top of. I can't find a weakness in that Saracen side. And I think that's why they find themselves in an incredible position of doing a double again this season. Obviously, a lot of other teams have found it fairly hard to find a weakness too.
Emma, are they really that good, Saracens?
Yes, I think they are. I think that's the thing. We saw Munster put them under a lot of pressure, and yet they weathered that pressure. Every time teams test Saracens in any way, they react and they have all of the answers. I really do think they are that good. And unlike Clermont, they have the experience. They have the knowledge. They're not going to play the game emotionally too early in the week because they've been in finals weeks. They've done it before and they've won. They're in the driving seat here. And in my eyes, it's Saracen's game to lose.
I think, you mentioned that there, that it's solving problems. And the trust that Mark McCall and his coaching staff show in the players that they choose week in, week out. They rested eight players against Wasp, but still believe that side could go up to Coventry and win. The trust that they show in those players helps those players solve the problems that teams pose against them. And that's a really, really big or good position for those sides to be in. If you can solve problems out there on the field, then you're in a strong position.
Because here's the thing, you will be going out with a master plan, won't you? It'll be written up on whiteboards, sent to your iPads, however it's done in different clubs. But it's very rare that things go according to plan. So how many backup plans do you have? Do you have a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, if it's not working?
The old Clermont, you would say, right, plan A is just run sides off the field. And perhaps they didn't really have a plan B to go to. What we saw against Toulon, it was raining, and they managed to dog that out and win. So they're a side that's evolving like Saracens have evolved. When Brendan Venter came into the Saracens camp, he stripped it right back and everyone was calling them boring, weren't they? They're kicking everything, putting pressure on sides. Defence was the key. Well, they've now expanded. They've put bricks on the foundations of that game. And now they have an all-court game that's, really tough to break down.
And Emma, defence wins matches. Do Clermont have a good enough defence to weather a Saracens storm?
They're physical, Clermont. I mean, they're pack, or a big pack, and they're not going to shy away. And defensively, they will be in Saracens' faces. But then you look at the individuals that are in Saracens' back line, and they have the spark, the firepower, your Ashtons, your Alex Goods. They can create those moments that make really, really good defences look not average, but outfox them.
I think Clermont's problem is the top 14. They won't have come up against a side that have an organised system of attack with those key players that Emma's talking about. For them, they're not going to have been used to it. They're not going to face that much before. Okay, they've played against Leinster, but you're doing that on sort of irregular occasions. Their regular day-to-day is that domestic league in the top 14, and there are not too many sides that are playing the sort of rugby that Saracens can play.
Well, I'm delighted to say we've been joined by a former Wales Lions, crucially a Clermont Auvergne former player. Lee Byrne is our first guest. And if you're a Clermont Auvergne fan, you know that you've got here so many times before. What do you think is different this time around?
Obviously the players that they've brought in at the moment, I was part of the losing team. We had a great team then, but I just think the team they got at the moment, the likes of Strettel, Nick Abandonen and Basiliato, they're just players throughout the board, really. They can bring in, as Tom will know, with the top 14 as well. You've got to mix your squads well. And, they've got a week off now as well with the barrage because they finished in semi-final. So, that's going to give them a big boost after the final as well, because we played Saracen 2013 or 14 in the semis, and a week later we went back into the into the top 14, and the season just went downhill from there. So, you know, albeit if they win, I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers that they win, you know, they'll have another week to recover, to get back into the top 14 and hopefully get a trophy that the, you know, the players and the fans deserve, really.
Lee, one of the biggest changes for me has been at 10. Obviously, Brock James was there for years, and Camilo Lopez now has changed the game for them, I think. Do you think he could be key to turning Saracens over this weekend?
Yeah, definitely. I think Brock was there for 10 years and he was a terrific servant. You know, we also had David Skrela there as well. But like you said, Camilo Lopez is a different player altogether. He seemed to step up in the right moments, you know, with the 3 points, the drop goal. You know, he's not scared to take the chances and the risks, and I think it's paid off this season. And, you know, let's just hope this weekend that they can get a result.
Just going back to the psychology of this final and this competition for Claremore, how much will that be discussed in camp this week, do you think, versus how much we're discussing it on the outside? Is it going to be something that's touched on a lot, or just part of the history and not really focused on overly?
Yeah, you know, they've only won once in the last 14 finals, Claremont, in total, really. That's with top 14 and the old Heineken Cup and Champions Cup. So I think Saracens have got that winning mentality at the moment. That's my only concern, really.
That's a shocking stat, isn't it, Lee, when you think about it? I mean, to get that close and to come unstuck virtually every time, that's surely got to play a part in your mentally ahead of this, even if you've joined recently.
Well, yeah, you know, there's, but in fairness to the supporters, they keep coming back year in, year out. And, you know, as Tom Borridge played there, and, you know, they're the best, well, one of the best sporting clubs you can wish to play in front of, and it's inspiring really when you play in front of them. But away from home is, you know, it's going to be a different story, but I'm sure the Yellow Army will be there. But yeah, going back to the record side of things, you know one in the last 14 is you know, is crazy really. But obviously Ruggeri as well has lost the World Cup, add to that as well. So yeah, the record isn't looking great, but Saracens have really they know to win, and they know to steal games off, and that's my only concern really going into this game weekend. I think the players are there, it's just the mentality side of things now, if they can break that barrier.
100% agree that the players are there, and two guys that you've mentioned already, actually, David Strettel and Nick Abendon, and Strettel obviously been in that Saracens camp. What have they added to Claremont? Because they've always had some outstanding outside backs, like yourself. what have they brought this over the past couple of seasons to Claremont?
Well, speaking to the boys as well in the camp, you know, Claremont's training in years gone by has been pretty intense, really. Not things that we're used to in Europe, and in the French boys may not have been used to, and you know, it was fine. But I think Strettel, when he came to the club, you know, he sort of learned a bit from the way Saracens deal with things off the field as well. You know, we know rugby's a serious business, but also, you know, we do like to enjoy ourselves as well. So I know they've been going on various camps to Barcelona, maybe a couple of days letting the hair down, then training again. Speaking to a couple of the players, that's had a massive input, really, and it's had no effect on the results on the field. So Strettel, I think he's brought a lot really on and off the field in terms of, you know, how to enjoy yourself and also how to, you know, to really when to put the training in, really.
So Lee, if you're Claremont and you're looking at this game, where do you target Saracens? Do they have a weakness? And even if they do, can Claremont take advantage of it?
I think player for player, I think you'd have to go with Claremont in terms of ability and playing-wise. You know, Saracens, they've got great players, but not household names like Claremont, but we've always had the same thing in Claremont, household names, but never get over that line. But I just think it's just a mental thing this weekend, this player for player. There's no doubt for me that Claremont have got them, but it's just how to win them games and finish them off. I think if they can start well, like you said, Camilo Lopez and not let little 3 points, I think we've seen on the weekend, last weekend against Leinster when just before half time, I think it was a kick, Morgan Parra, just 3 points, and you know, little slips like that. He missed the kick, and then Leinster come back and scored and a penalty, and then they went in half time. There's a complete change of, you know, the scoreline going into half time, where they could have been 23-3 up, where Leinster come back, scored a try conversion, and they let themselves back in it. I think little things like that let Claremont down at times, and that's going to be on the game this weekend.
Lee, great to have you on the podcast. Thanks very much. Thanks indeed. Much, and yeah, fingers crossed for you and for all the Claremont fans this weekend.
Thanks very much. Cheers, guys.
Tom, he's confident, isn't he? Is he mistaken?
No, I don't think so. Claremont will see this as a real opportunity. They've made some changes to their game. So, you know, I can understand why Lee's feeling like that.
Are we underestimating Claremont, do you think?
I don't think it's so much that we're underestimating them, because clearly they've got a huge amount of quality. And it's really tough to stop them when they gain momentum. And that's what Saracens will try and shut down. And, you know, Lee talks about the players and the qualities that they have in those players. That's exactly what Saracens will be focusing on in their preview and their build-up this week. The fans that Clermont take over to Edinburgh will be a huge factor in that. But I think almost we're not underestimating them, but we're talking about how good Saracens are and how difficult they are to beat.
So that's
the problem.
A different team, it would be a different circumstance.
Yeah, I think we'd be saying that Clermont would be in a stronger position should they not be facing Saracens.
Emma, I think of their fans as well, who travel in droves, so many for so many games. They'll be flying, taking trains, driving all the way up to Edinburgh for this one. What are the fans saying?
I mean, obviously, there'll be a lot of home support that do go over. And equally, there's a respect for Clermont and the individuals across the English fans as well. Fred Morrison on Facebook, he lists the number of players to watch out for in that final that could be their game changers. We've mentioned a lot of them. Nick Abendanon, Scott Spedding, David Strettel, obviously Morgan Power as well. They have a host of these game changers, but as Tom's just mentioned, they're up against Saracens, which are a very, very organised side, and defensively you're going to have to do something very special to outfox Saracens.
Yeah, let's speak to someone now who can give us that Saracens perspective, a man who played in the final back in 2014, also part of the Sarries team that thrashed Clermont-Auvergne 46-6 in that year's semi-final. Jacques Berger, one of the most bruising players I've ever had the fortune to watch play. And Jacques, you're now back in sunny Namibia, back on the farm. Paint a picture for us.
I'm sitting out here. I've got my dogs around me. And life is pretty good at the moment.
Tell us about the Sarries attitude, Jacques, because it really does make them out, mark them, if you like, from other teams.
It's a strange thing to talk about. I think a lot of people don't understand it. They find it quite offensive in a way, because I think in the past it's been spoken about a lot. But I think the team and the group has proved it time and time again. When things get tough, they're a team and a group of players that can stand up against tough situations. And it's something that started from the time I joined, I think with Brendan Benter and then Mark McCall and all them coming through, Edward Griffith, they just kind of said, we're going to be the toughest, most hardworking club around. You know, we're going to do great things. We're going to treat you unbelievably well as players. We look after your families. All we want you is to go out there and just grind and just give your absolute 100% every time you play. So I think it was they created this whole culture of we're just one big family, and they will do anything for us as long as we do our part and play hard and stick to it till the 90th minute, however long it takes. So it's come quite a big thing. You know, they've contracted players over the years. They've obviously lost a lot of players, me included. I've been away for a year now, but you can see the guys they sign and the new guys they get in. It's guys who fit in perfectly with this plan of just outworking teams. You know, when it gets tough, you can see the boys will just keep hanging in there, keep fighting. And that's a tough thing to create. And hats off to Mark McCall and all of them who are doing a great job at the moment.
Jacques, Saracens have been brilliant both in the Premiership and the European competition. Now, if you look at their skills, the skill level isn't necessarily that much greater than any other teams. Do you think that mental edge, if you compare the two teams this weekend, the mental edge that they will have undoubtedly on Clermont will give them the advantage to tip the win in their favour?
Skills have never been one of my best assets. I try to stay away from the ball as much as possible. It is something they work incredibly hard on, Tom. I think what's been great with the development of Saracens, you know, and what I've seen, what they do throughout the week, training-wise, even though it annoyed me immensely, is the amount of skill works they go through. You know, the basic skills of passing drills and just working off your weakest hand and strongest hand, everybody from prop till fullbacks. I think, obviously, the skills have improved massively. You can see the way the guys play, and but it also comes with a lot of confidence, I think, though. I think because they've been playing really well and they've been scoring some ridiculous tries. They do have this confidence now where they can throw the ball around. They know the guy who does have the opportunity to make the call will make the right decision. He will go down with the ball. He will make the offload that's necessary. It's not just chucking it around senselessly. So I do think the plan is executed extremely well. And there is time for that to play the ball around a little bit.
Jack, I want to talk about the team bonding element to Sarries. They've just come back from their latest adventure in Barcelona. You've been part of the squad. I think you must have done Oktoberfest, Miami, Chicago. Have you been on those trips?
I have been.
What do you get from them?
We obviously don't drink at all as a whole group, so that is something we put aside. Now, you know what? It's again, I'm taking back 7-8 years ago. It's when with this all started, this whole project started. And I was fortunate enough to be involved in that. And a lot of people had questions about why do we do it? I think some of the players themselves, they were just too excited to go out and drink some beers. But when you think about it in the long run, the whole explanation behind it is that, so Edward Griffiths said, listen, if we can spend as much time with each other off the pitch as possible, it'll make us much better as a team and as a union. And so we went out and we did our first trip, and all the boys just sat there and had a few beers. And when you find yourself, you speak to someone different than you normally speak to in your weekly program or your weekly, your locker room. You've got your same players there every time. You mix with the guys you feel comfortable with. But this kind of forces you, everybody, to hang out together, you know. And it gets out of hand every now and again, but you always have to have that thing in the back of your head that you are here on a mission to kind of grow as a group, to enjoy yourself, but to behave and just carry forth the Saracens name. And it's been done well over the years. Now that I retire, now it's something that's meant a lot to me, because rugby can be such a tough thing to do if you do it week in and week out without taking any breaks. Now, it's mentally extremely tough performing at the highest of levels. So doing things like this gives you that breather, it gives you that time away from rugby where you don't have to talk about it once. You can just sit there, enjoy a beer, enjoy the sun. It's a bonding thing, you know, and for me, it was great to be involved in, because now I'm done with rugby. I'm out here in Namibia, but I still have those memories of those great times we spent together.
Tommy May, this is what fascinates me. Saracens have built this reputation now, haven't they, of being this team that bond better than any other team in the world. Hmm. I mean, tell me what bonding was like for you at all the teams. Did you have anything which compared with this?
I don't think it was as organised bonding as it seems from the outside. Certainly when I was at other clubs and we saw what was going on at Saracens, there was...
Jealous?
Jealous is probably an extreme. I guess the players were slightly envious of what was happening. And there were certain people and certain coaches that would just flat out hammer what Saracens were doing. I think what they were doing, they saw as a really key threat to them as a club and to what they were doing in-house. So, you know, I think people really understand what Saracens has done. It takes a lot of confidence and a bit of balls to go out and actually do it because it's so different to what's been done before. But you can quite clearly see, you know, Jacques mentioned there, it's been a 7-8 year program and now they're really reaping the rewards.
Jacques, can you tell me Mark McCall's influence on this team? Because compared with Brendan Venter, who kind of, in a sense, was part of one of the main creators of this Saracens dynamic, if you like, Mark McCall appears to me one of the quiet ones in the background. Doesn't say a lot, but doesn't probably need to say a lot.
Yeah, I think that's the way this whole program started. They got the right people. You know? They got people for the future. I think when Brendan and Edward and them were in control, they sat down and said, listen, who can we get? Who's going to fit in perfectly what we want to do over a long period of time? Not just for this year, not just for next year, but somebody who can, if we leave and this player goes, and like all players have to go, all coaches have to go their way sometimes, who's going to step in their place and carry on this whole culture we've built? You know, and I think Mark McCall was perfect for that. He can be strict at times, you know, but he's a great guy. You know, he's a good guy to speak to and he's a very likable person. And I think a lot of the players do have a lot of respect for him in that sense, because he is quite quiet. It's not something that's going to threaten you and shout and scream, but he's an extremely sensible guy. And I think what he's done, when Brendan and then left, I think there was a little bit of a fear of uncertainty what's going to happen now, because things were going so well at that time. And we all were kind of afraid he's going to go a completely different way. He might have his own ideas. But no, it kind of stayed the same. You know, the values, the core values stayed the same. Yes, we have to adapt because the game of rugby adapts and changes every year. So we did do new things and he did bring in a couple of new things, the new coaches, but the core of things stayed the same, you know. And I think if it isn't broken, then why fix it? You know? So that's what they're trying to do. And I think he's done a great job.
Jacques, looking forward to Saturday late afternoon, how do you see this one panning out between Saracens and Claremont?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think, obviously, the disappointments, Claremont's had a lot of final disappointments, so they'll go into this quite nervous. Whereas with the reigning champions, it's been going really well. We played very well last year, and last year was obviously exceptional. So it's tough. I always have a lot of respect for Claremont as a team. There's a lot of French sides with loads and loads of quality. I think Toulon, a couple of years ago, when we played them in the final, I could feel like they just have superstar players. They can just break the game at any moment, and that's exactly what they did. But with Claremont, they do have great players, but they have guys who actually work pretty hard. They're a tough French team to play against because they work hard. They've got good players and they've got great skills, so they can hurt you at any time, and they will push you till the very final minute. I'm obviously going to say Saracens are going to win this one comfortably, but I think in the back of my head, I think it's going to be extremely, extremely tight. But I hope Saracens can just pull it through.
And Jack, you were in the team that you know, lost against Toulon in the final in 2014, but then you were celebrating with them when you won it. What changed? Can you put your finger on how you evolve as a team between, I suppose, if we're being blunt about it, the bridesmaids turning into the bride? Because both these teams have gone through this. Sarries have been there and done it, but Clermont are still to do it.
Yeah. No, you know what? The great thing about rugby is, for me, the first season I joined Saracens was unbelievable. We went through this winning streak and eventually we lost in the final at the death to Leicester. And I was gutted. I think everybody was gutted. But then it was another lesson learned. You know, Benin said the same thing. It wasn't our time. We weren't ready yet. And I think over the years, we've evolved to a stage where we are ready. We have beaten big teams in the finals. We have lost big, you know, in big finals. We've had loads of setbacks, but we know what we're incapable of. I think that's the main thing, is the confidence that we've built over the years that we can beat the very best of teams. You know, and I think Clermont do have that themselves, except they also, in the back of the head, have slipped up in big stage matches. So I think mentally we're slightly ahead of them, but that's not something. I think the mental part of it can carry you for a small while, then you have to just kind of get stuck in and work for it. But I believe it's going to be a hell of a match.
Jacques, enjoy the game, enjoy the farm, enjoy the view. Thanks for coming on the pod.
No, massive pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy.
He was the breakdown king at Sarries, wasn't he, Tom May? Who do you think has taken over that mantle from him since he left?
He was the breakdown king, but he's paid the price in the number of scars he's had. Listen, the way they work, that breakdown is a key focus for them, obviously. You look at someone like Jackson Rae in the back row, he is a proper pain in the backside. You know, okay, they've got some stellar names within that Saracens unit, but I think he's key to...
Massive communicator as well.
Yeah, I think he adds a lot to that side, but probably sort of goes under the radar a bit because there's so many other massive problems around him, one of those being Billy Vunipola. But also look at the work that Brad Barrett does at the breakdown. You can see, you know, it's another back rower, isn't it?
It's his body position, Barrett, isn't it, where I think stands him out from many others.
Yeah, I think so, but... You know, and normally you say, well, it's the smaller guys that can get into that position. You know, Jamie George, people like that. But Mara Toje, you know, equally adept at stealing ball. So there's clearly a massive focus on that. But they need to be focused because, you know, so much of Clermont's game is built around momentum, speed. Anything they can do to slow that down will be vital.
Well, I'm delighted to say we can now speak to the man in charge on Saturday, one of the game's best, most respected referees over the last two decades. Welcome to the show, Nigel Owens. Nigel, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. How are you all?
Well, Nigel, you'll be as nervous as anybody, won't you, I suppose, this weekend. What does it mean to you to be officiating in charge at Murrayfield this Saturday?
Well, it's a great honour. You know, it's the European Cup final, so it is... pinnacle of club or provincial rugby here in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's been a wonderful tournament over the years, and this year has been no different. You know, the quality of the games, the excitement of the tournament, you know, with two great semi-finals, two different semi-finals, but yet great semi-finals in their own right. And I think now everybody's looking forward to hopefully a great final as well, and hope it is a great final. You know, you have the two best teams in Europe this year. I don't think anybody will argue with that. Everybody's hoping for a great final, so let's hope that it is one, and to be part of it, and just a small part of it as a referee, but yet again, you know, a part of it. It is truly a great honour and privilege, and looking forward to it immensely, really.
Nigel, we hear a lot about how the clubs and the players prepare for their big final weeks. Give us a little bit of an insight into how referees prepare. What does it take to get up for the game like this?
I prepare just the way I normally prepare, really. You know, I train quite hard sort of early on in the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'll still train on Thursday, but sort of tailor it off a bit, and then some sort of maybe off feet and some gym stretching and some upper body sort of weights and stuff maybe on Friday, and do some of my match preparation as well, you know, because a couple of things I'd like to look at before the game, you know. I may look at a couple of scrums by the both team and a couple of little things just to get a bit of sort of info in your head, really, if you need to call it on the day. So just a little bit of preparation, really, but you feel a bit more pressure leading up to a final than you would to something else, because obviously the final is called the final for that reason.
Nigel, speaking with my commentary hat on here, I think one of the things which has made a massive difference is hearing that conversation between the ref and the players. We hear it on the ref feed. It's the same for radio as it is for TV. How do you think that has changed the role of the official in the middle and develop your role and that, of course, of your assistant referees on the touchline?
Well, I think it's been hugely beneficial to the game itself, because the game needed it, really, and wanted the referees to wear the microphone. So people who are not really sort of that up to speed with the complexity of the game of rugby, in one sense, to get them to the game and watch the game so they could also listen to the referee and then understand why decisions were being made. So it would hopefully then open up a total new audience. And I think it's done that. I don't think it's the reason why there's new audience and there's more people watching rugby now and following rugby. It's not because of the referee's mic. It's because of the game has grown and the game has become a great spectacle. But also the people who come to the rugby game who are watching rugby at home for the first time and are looking at the game and thinking, well, what is going on here? Why did the referee blow that whistle there? And I think by the referee explaining those decisions, I think has been hugely beneficial, I think, to everybody in the game, you know, from the spectators to the people, the pundits, everybody watching the game at home, the people at the stadium who get the reference. And obviously it's quite clear to everybody involved then when the referee communicates on why a decision is given. And I think that's helped the game a lot.
Nigel, this is going to be your 100th match in the tournament. What are your best memories from the 99 that have gone by?
Yeah, it is. And the only problem with reaching 100 games is that you realise there's a lot less time to go in refereeing than there's been. That's the only downside of it. But when you do, you know, I don't referee to reach these milestones. I referee because I just love the game and I'm enjoying it. And if I'm still refereeing well and at the top of my game, that's the reason why I will still continue to enjoy it. You know, what are the memories of it? I think it's just the wonderful memories of the competition itself. I think of an European competition where you have the best teams in all the countries competing against each other, which obviously then sometimes, you know, the intensity of those matches quite often are of test match intensity, because you'll have some games which will have, you know, 20, 25 test match players on the field, even more in some occasions. You are actually refereeing sort of test matches in a way, albeit without the international sort of countries playing. So, and I think probably looking back, my first European game was up in London Irish against Piacenza, I think it was back in 2001 and 2002. So doing your first European game, you know, for the first time was something special. So there's all different memories, you know, for different reasons. And then the first European Cup final I did, which was the old Heineken Cup back then, when I did Munster against Toulouse in the Millennium Stadium, the Principality Stadium now, but in the Millennium Stadium at the time, which the first time I refereed a big game in my own national stadium, which was something special. The atmosphere that day was absolutely electric. And then to other games like Leinster-Munster in the semi-final in 2009 in Croke Park in Dublin, with a world record crowd for a club game at that time of 83,500 packed into Croke Park. And it was an amazing game of rugby, amazing atmosphere. It was like a test match, you know, and all the other finals and all the occasions, really. It is really the most wonderful of tournaments, you know, and it's a real privilege and honour to be a part of it.
And I suppose an added element of the whole ref mic thing, Nigel, is that you really do see the respect between the referee and the player, and that's obviously critical.
It's hugely important, I think, the respect between match officials and players and players and match officials and the respect within the game, you know. The most important fundamental value of rugby union and its ethos of respect. And we can never, ever lose that from the game. You know, as I said, respect from players to match officials, vice versa, and spectators sitting next door to each other in the stadium, yet supporting different teams, but yet able to feel safe and enjoy in that environment. And, you know, players' respect for each other on the field, you know, really playing hard and hitting hell out of each other, really, in the legal side of it, in the big hits and the tackles. And yet, on some occasions, you see the players reaching over to give a hand to lift a player off the ground, or, you know, shaking hands after the game and enjoying each other's company after the game. And it's a hugely, hugely important part of rugby. to me, it's the greatest team sport in the world on the field, and without a shadow of a doubt, in my humble opinion, the greatest of team sports in the world off the field as well. And one of the main reasons of that, not the only reason, but one of the main fundamental reasons of that is its respect.
Nigel, top stuff. As ever, great to have you on the podcast. Good luck with the 100th game.
Thank you very much. I'll need a bit of luck as well, because whatever you do in life, and refereeing is no different, you need a bit of luck. So, yeah, a bit of luck won't go miss on Saturday, because, you know, this will be one hell of a tough game, that's for sure.
Nigel, great stuff. Great to have you on the podcast. See you in Edinburgh. That is Nigel Owens, the man with the whistle, and he's going to be an ambassador for Tissot's Respect the Ref campaign. Tom May, battles all over the park this weekend. I know you've identified a few for us.
Yeah, obviously there's some key positions which would stand out, and the obvious battles between Wigglesworth and Parra and Farrell and Lopez are, you know, they'd be ones to watch and pay your ticket money for anyway. Ashton against Strettle, I think two guys that arguably could have had, you know, a shout to go on the Lions tour. I think unluckily for them, there's a lot of people that are playing on the international stage that are in fine form. Those guys have, you know, they have an ability to create something out of nothing. Fritz Lee against Billy Vunipola. Fritz Lee came into Claremont as a medical joker. He wasn't even in their squad originally a couple of years back, and he's turned that position into his own. His ability, or both those players' ability, to get their teams on the front foot, create them quick ball, they'll be vital for this weekend. And then I think, you know, being a centre myself, Brad Barrett against Remy Lamorat. You know, you don't often see some of the work that goes in from those two players, but it's the down and dirty stuff they get stuck into, and you know, they're vital for their sides.
That said, who's your pick?
Saracens. Do you want me to elaborate?
No, well.
I think they're just in too strong a position to try and find a weakness. You know, you threw that at me earlier on. I've been thinking about it since.
They have had off moments, though, haven't they, recently? They've had 20-minute spells where they've just not really been the Saracens that we're used to watching, Emma.
But we all know it's an 80-minute game, and what they're able to do is ride out those spells, make sure that they're not too destructive on the scoreboard, and then go into that other gear that they've got. So, personally, I agree with Tom, Saracens.
I think they've got an understanding as a team that they've got a big respect, and they respect other teams they play against. And the difference between them, perhaps, and some of the other sides is they understand that they all have their moment in the game. And it's how you deal with those problems and how you adapt your game to stop those and create more opportunities for yourself. And they've got an ability to do that.
So it's ASM Clermont Auvergne against Saracens at BT Murrayfield Stadium in Edinburgh. 5 o'clock kickoff local time this Saturday, the 13th of May. And you can watch it on Sky Sports, BT Sport in the UK, beIN Sports and FR2 in France. Next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, we'll look ahead to the Challenge Cup final.
Remember, you can watch highlights from the Challenge Cup and Champions Cup knockout round matches presented by Heineken. Available 12 hours after the final whistle. Head to epcrugby.com for more information.
Well, Saturday's Champions Cup final is not the only match of the finals weekend at BT Murrayfield. Before it, on Friday evening, Gloucester Rugby take on Stade Français Paris in the European Rugby Challenge Cup final. Now, Emma, you've been talking to one of Gloucester Rugby's players ahead of this one.
Yes, I caught up with Gloucester's prop, John Afoa, and started by asking him about how the squad were feeling in Cup final week.
Yeah, well, we've had good form in the European competition the last couple of years. So, you know, it's a competition we like playing, and it just keeps things interesting. And obviously, we signed off on our last Premiership game in the weekend, but, you know, we've turned up with real energy, real focus for a big game against Stade on Friday night.
Obviously, you were part of the side that lifted the trophy in 2015 at the Stoop. How valuable will it be to have had that experience relatively recently?
Yeah, well, a lot of guys who were here a couple of years ago played that game, but, you know, 2 years is a long time, and, you know, our team has changed, our dynamics have changed, so, you know, it's something fresh for us. We want to make sure that the boys are excited, you know, about this game, which is a one-off, and, you know, start a good team. Plenty of experienced players have been in the European finals. So, you know, it's crucial for us that we've got to be able to turn up and play well if we want to get the result.
And as a squad, what are the key things that you need to nail this weekend in order to make sure that you lift that trophy?
I think a big one for us is our penalty count. You know, our set piece has got to be strong, our discipline around the field. You know, they've got a good 9 and 10. And if we give away easy penalties or shots at goal, you know, they can build a lead and they really grow in confidence. So it's crucial for us that we just keep things real nice and clean. Don't give them any easy field position and just make them really work hard for their points and frustrate them.
looking at the Stad pack, what are the nuances that you need to prepare for?
They're a very powerful four, as you know. They've got internationals in their forward pack, and they're going to be a handful at Supish, you know, so it's crucial that we're smart, but we're confrontational. We take them on at the scrum and, you know, around the field. If it's breakdown, if it's more time, and we just got to make sure that we can't just give them easy meters, you know. Traditionally, French teams are big packs, and, you know, if they get momentum and behind you, they're very hard to stop with their nines and tens running the show.
As well as a Challenge Cup trophy, a win on Friday night would also give you a place in the Champions Cup playoffs. How much of a motivating factor is the opportunity to play top-tier European rugby?
Yeah, I think everything's on the line, and, you know, to win something, to earn some more games in the playoffs, to try and get into that top-tier European Cup would be amazing for the club. So, you know, for us, it's just making sure we get our motivation right, and we don't get too caught up in the emotion and the things that we want to do, that we just go out there, execute our game plan and make sure we win the big moments in the game.
On a personal note, how much are you looking forward to the match on Friday night?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. You know, playing in finals is what it's all about. The weather's much better, and, you know, we can just play a more natural game of swinging the ball side to side. So there's going to be elements of that, but then also there's going to be elements of rolling up the sleeves and looking to smash bodies. But, you know, I'm always happy to play, and but playing in a final at a great field like Edinburgh is going to be a great occasion for the team and the club.
I'm sure that there'll be plenty of Cherry and White fans up there at BT Murrayfield. You managed to deliver in the semi-final in quite an intense atmosphere away from home in La Rochelle, so Murrayfield should be a little bit more familiar.
Yeah, you know, a very big French crowd away to La Rochelle, but, you know, we're very fortunate. We've got a great support network in Gloucester, and, you know, like you said, a lot will make the travel up there, but, you know, we can't get caught up in the trap that, you know, just because we've got more fans and we've got more things to play for, that will do it for us. So, you know, it comes back to the rugby, comes back to the 80 minutes, what we do on the field. But, you know, getting the prep right during the week is important as well. But, you know, getting up there early, a good travel day, just being nice and comfortable, nice and relaxed, but absolutely clear on what's needed is going to be crucial for us.
Finally, what would lifting the European Challenge Cup trophy on Friday mean?
Yeah, it'll just add something we can actually hold on to. You know, we've had a mixed bag season. You know, if we go into the playoffs and make the top two Europe, that's great, but there's nothing to hold on to. So if there's something that the club can lift and actually show for some hard work, you know, just show when we get it right, there are things to win. So, you know, it'll just be a good finish to the year.
Well, that was Gloucester prop John O'Fur talking to Emma. Guys, this Challenge Cup final is fascinating, isn't it? Because both Gloucester and Stad have had pretty tough seasons. And they'll look at this and think, wow, what an opportunity.
I think that's exactly it. It's a massive opportunity for them to win some silverware. And no matter what trophy it is you're holding at the end of the season, they all count, right? So this is just as important to these two teams as you know, the other game will be. And I think both sides have a history and a desire to be at the top of the game. And this is a great chance for them.
Well, let's get a view from France, but on both finals, actually, since there is representation in both. Rugby journalist Leo Faure joins us from Midi Olympique. Leo, great to have you on the podcast.
Hello, Harrison. Nice to meet you.
Let's start with Stade Francais and the Challenge Cup final, because a few months ago, some of those players probably thought they may not be in a job. And now here they are with a huge opportunity to win some silverware. Psychologically, and we've been talking a lot about that in today's podcast, they've had to deal with some serious up and downs, haven't they?
Yeah, it's an amazing opportunity for them to win a title because they were so down a few months ago and it was a bit unexpected, let's to be honest, and they have to get this opportunity, definitely.
Who do you think have been the players who have carried them along? Because as Tom will know, when you're in a team which is, I suppose, fluctuating in form and temperament, you turn to your leaders, don't you? You turn to the key men to get you through the tough moments. Who are those players at Stade Francais?
I have to recognise with Vigna. He had a first year in France, was awful. He got injured a lot, and the beginning of the season was no good. But he's back. He's back, the wallaby, the player they expected to have recruited. He brings a lot of pace to the game of Stade Francais. He changed this a lot for them.
And perhaps with regards to those players and Stade Francais themselves, for perhaps those viewers who haven't seen too much of them as a side this year, who are those players to look out for aside from Genia, and what sort of style of play can we expect from the Parisian side?
It's an attacking team. It's an offensive team. It will be interesting to check out who will be the fly half. Will it be Morenstein or Jules Plisson? I would bet on Moni Steyn because he has much more experience for that kind of game. He can be a key player for them. Then you have, obviously, Sergio Parisse, who is a huge player. Everybody know him, and he can make a lot of difference. He's the captain, incredible skills. Yeah, this we call it the spin in French, the 8, 9, 10. That's the center of the game, and that's the very dangerous part of this team.
I could easily see this game being tries galore. Gloucester love an expansive game. They love putting width on the ball. How about Stade? Do they like a more direct approach, or can they trade pound for pound with Gloucester if it becomes a bit of a try-scoring fest?
No, they'll play fast. They play a fast rugby. It's not like Racing, for example, the other Parisian team. They play fast rugby. They have quite good players on the back lines. I think about Wysea, the kind of got Bonneval. Camara is in a very, very, very good form. So they play rugby. It's going to be a great final, I think, because they're not only waiting for the defence and the kicking. They'll try their luck.
And therefore, if it does turn out like that, who do you think has the advantage? Who has the edge?
A few months ago, I would have told you Gloucester, but Stade Français is a surprisingly good team in the end of this season. I'll put a little bet on Stade Français.
Tom, Emma, panel predictions for this one?
Gloucester, when they're on form, I can see them taking this final. But the question mark with them that I've had constantly is consistency. If they nail it from the beginning and they get their confidence, then I'd say a Gloucester win.
Well, they put themselves in a good position last week, didn't they, against Exeter, and they blew that at home. And I think that will be a big bruise for them to overcome before facing an informed Stade side. I would put my money on Stade actually this weekend, I think. I think they've got enough. All of the goings-on in Paris this season have galvanised them as a side, and I think they'll probably win this game.
So Gloucester against Stade Français, Paris at BT Murrayfield, 8 p.m. kickoff local time this Friday, the 12th of May. You can see it on Sky Sports and BT Sport in the UK, BN Sports and FR, Quatre in France. And Leo, before you go, we must speak to you about Clermont against Saracens in the Champions Cup. Clermont, we've discussed it until I think we're blue in the face. Do they have the mental strength to get over this hurdle and win their first piece of top-flight European silverware?
That's a big question. The mental question is always a big thing in France and especially in Clermont. I'll tell you something. I talked to David Strettel last week after the game Saturday. And it was very interesting because, you know, he knows both teams, Clermont and Saracens, very well. Just told me that the best of Clermont is better than the best of Saracens. But there's no doubt that the Saracens will play 100%, that they'll be at their best. There's a big doubt on Clermont. That was an interesting point of view from an English player, actually, because he was like, you have so much emotions, friends, and you don't know all the time how to handle all these emotions. If we manage to handle the emotion, Clermont will win. But it's not sure at all. That's the big question, the mental one.
And how do they manage that psychology and make sure that emotion doesn't overcome them this weekend in this final?
They put a lot on their number 9, number 10, Para Lopez. Expectations and hope, because Para is having his best season since a while, maybe since 5 or 6 years. That's strange because he's actually not playing anymore for France, but he's at his best. He's 28, he's getting matured. And Lopez is, we saw it in semi-final, he kicked two drop goals, very important. They really hope that these two players will bring them the title and will bring them that cool side that they miss since a while.
Leo, thanks very much indeed for coming on the podcast, and enjoy this weekend in Murrayfield.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk about another match taking place at finals weekend before the end of the show. But next, we'll tell you about the final five players who are still in the running to be named the EPCR European Player of the Year 2017.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston.
Now, another feature of finals weekend will be the crowning of the EPCR European Player of the Year 2017, presented by Turkish Airlines after the Champions Cup final. The long list of 15 is now down to a select group of five potential award winners. Now, Tom and Emma, I want five words, please, from both of you on each of the quintet as I read them out. All set?
It was quite tough getting five words. It's 25 words.
You haven't had homework like this in decades, have you?
It's tricky, and I'm a bit concerned that Tom might say all my words and then I'm going to be left with none.
Yeah, this is all about who goes first.
Yeah, isn't it?
I'd like to go first, isn't it?
Like I've got a good one for the last one, though.
It's ladies first, isn't it, James?
I'll go ladies first, actually. Just to put me in his corner. Owen Farrell, Saracens.
Competitive, steely. Leader, a standard setter, and reliable.
Well, hang
borderline
on.
Standard setter.
No. Surely it's hyphenated, right? Or if it's not, I'll make it.
Go on, Tom.
Right, she's got one of mine. Winner, tough, accurate, aggressive, and competitive.
Maro Toji, Tom May.
This man rarely ever loses.
Like that.
That's good. That is,
you're a bit smug at that one, aren't you?
I've just been trumped on the second answer, haven't I? Right. I have physical, intense, a thinker, impressive, beyond his years. Again, a few words.
Hang on. Have we just changed the rules of the competition?
We had designated rules.
All
right. We're just not abiding by them.
You seemed not to be sticking to the script.
Winner.
Okay.
It's the last one.
You can make up for it by giving me your five for Camille Lopez from Clément Auvergne.
Maturing, opportunist, determined.
She's making it.
You're
up.
Struggling, aren't you?
Unpredictable.
It's a bit like this
competition. I thought I was going to struggle with 25 words.
Go on, Tom.
Relaxed.
Yeah. Ooh.
Difference. Skilled. Brilliantly French.
Yeah, it's true. Gary Ringrose, Tom May.
Footwork, pace, vision, speed, bod.
That is impressive.
Do you think his little one's been helping him with the prep this week?
It'll help me.
Emma first.
I would have done a bit better.
Come on, give me your Ringrose specials.
Decisive, talented, ball player, game changer.
He's certainly been the heartbeat.
That's six.
Yes.
Hyphens.
Actually, she's off the scale.
She's not the
Mash is not my forte.
Okay. He has been the heartbeat of Leinster, though, this season. So hats off to Gary Ringrose. And finally, let's hope we can get through this without another divorce. CJ Stander.
Don't get in his way.
He's one of Munster's best. Come on, Emma Thurston. Can you raise your game for this final one?
Ooh, it's pressure.
Have you not got this written down?
I've got it written down.
5-0.
I've got words, but you're going to tell me that there's non-hyphen in there. I had powerhouse, dynamic, determined, unit, and I had ball carrier, but then that's two words again, isn't it?
No, so I think ball carrier can be one.
Can I say I won that?
Potentially.
I think, yeah, there were moments of brilliance, a bit like your career, Tom May. There were moments of brilliance there, but the rest of it was pretty bog standard.
I might have a could try harder on that.
Right, well, the public vote is now open. You can pick the winner. All five have had exceptional seasons in European competition, but there are plenty of stats, match videos on epcrugby.com to help you make your choice. And of course, Farrell, Itoje and Lopez have one final chance to impress you with their performances at BT Murrayfield. Emma.
The winner of the EPCR European Player of the Year will be presented with 1 million air miles courtesy of tournament partners Turkish Airlines, and they'll be presented them at the Champions Cup final following the full-time whistle. Voting closes 15 minutes before the actual presentation. You can vote at our Facebook page, European Rugby Champions Cup, and also online at epcrugby.com/playeroftheyear2017. And by voting, you could be in with a chance of winning some outstanding prizes yourself, including 2 return tickets offered by Turkish Airlines up to €1,500 in value. So it's well worth a vote for one of those 5 players.
Absolutely. Good luck.
Check out the Edinburgh 2017 section of epcrugby.com to secure your place for an outstanding rugby experience at BT Murrayfield, with the final of the Challenge Cup at 8 p.m. local time on Friday the 12th of May and the final of the Champions Cup the following day at 5 p.m. local time.
Well, this is the EPCR European Rugby Show with me, James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston. We've told you about the Player of the Year vote, but Emma, there is still something else that European rugby fans can get involved with after finals weekend.
Yeah, and that's to vote for your European Rugby Champions Cup try of the season. From Monday the 15th of May, you can make your pick from all of the weekly round winners, and we might have added 1 or 2 to the shortlist from finals weekend at BT Murrayfield. So you'll need to head to epcrugby.com and the tournament's official social media channels, so that's at Champions Cup, for more details.
Tom, it is going to be very difficult to choose a try of the tournament, isn't it?
Well, it is, based on the fact that my memory goes back about 3 weeks and then everything's blank. No, there's been some fantastic tries this year, and you know, the likes of Ringrose and Gibson Park have certainly come up with some special tries. But you know, also Ashton and Streto, I think they, you know, potentially could come up with one this weekend. But I think that's something about this competition. The year in, year out, there are amazing tries that we watch and we look at in wonder. This competition does tend to bring the best out in the players.
Well, let's move on to a third match that is part of the finals weekend at BT Murrayfield, the European Rugby Continental Shield final. Now, this sees the two clubs who have battled through the qualifying competition for next season's European Rugby Challenge Cup going head-to-head at midday this Saturday, the 13th of May. Now, Edinburgh might be a long way from Krasnoyarsk in Russia, but the game is actually a local derby between Yenisei STM and Krasnoyarsk. Both have already booked their places in next season's Challenge Cup, but there is some silverware on offer to the winning team. Vasily Artemiev, or Captain Krasnoyarsk, former of Northampton Saints, for any fans from the English Premiership, you'll remember him well. We can speak to him now. Vasily, great to have you on the pod.
Hi, how are you doing?
How are you doing? Good to have you on. So what is this match mean to you, and how important is it?
Well, as you already said, this is a real derby in rugby terms in Russia, similar to maybe a Manchester derby in football. So this is it's an important game, and of course this is a perfect opportunity for the two teams to kind of open the season as well, because it's the start of the Russian rugby club season.
Now, Tom May's with me in the studio. You two are at Northampton together, and he's been telling me about how formidable, borderline scary, you are at wrestling, which was part of the training you did there, Tom. Care to elaborate?
Yeah, well, during pre-season, you're obviously put through a series of different tests in various different environments. And as an older guy within the squad, I thought, you know, I wouldn't obviously team myself off with one of the massive units. So I thought, you know, Vaz was fairly well defined, but wasn't one of the biggest guys. So I picked the left wing and he absolutely destroyed me every time.
Is that part of your training now?
I think it's a slight exaggeration, I think, sometimes. Anyway, yeah, thanks for the compliment. We kind of use it the odd time, not too often, because, you know, there's always a danger of an odd injury, you know, especially when people get fatigued and tired in terms of wrestling. So it's more of a all-round physical fitness in pre-season.
So tell us about rugby, though, in Krasnoyarsk and in Russia in general, then, Vasily. How different is it?
Yeah, I'll start in Russia in general. Rugby has existed in the Soviet Union for, I think, over 90 years now. There's a 90-year anniversary a couple of years ago. So this is it's always considered to be a bourgeois sport, obviously, so there's not much exposure in the Soviet Union, but the Soviet Union seemed to be quite strong back in the 70s and maybe early 80s. The Soviet Union club competition was a very strong and broad competition. Obviously, rugby experienced some difficulties after the breakdown of the USSR and the Georgian teams and the Romanian teams and the rest of the teams going their ways, separate ways. But the Russian club competition has survived through the 90s and grew from the early 2000s to reach the point where it is now. I think the biggest steps the Russian club rugby has taken was since 2011 in the Rugby World Cup in New Zealand. I think a lot of it was a big impulse for the amateur sport to grow, and it's still growing, and the amount of teams that appear every year, the number is still growing. So both clubs are going to play, my club, Krasnoyarsk, and Yenisei STM, our opponents. We consider this participation in the Challenge Cup as an ideal platform for the two clubs to promote their names and to grow, because only facing the stronger opponents, you can grow yourself. This is true for any professional sportsman. So this is ideal for us. And obviously, this is another way to promote Russian rugby in general. It will definitely attract some attention here in the country to the game. Yeah, this exposure will be, hopefully, will do its duty.
Vasily, great to have you on the podcast. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you very much. It was really good speaking to you.
Let's close then by looking ahead one final time to the Champions Cup final then. We haven't really talked much about discipline. We heard John O'Fur talking about it in Emma's interview, actually, about not giving away the penalties in the breakdown area. But discipline, you know, you've got to keep your head cool, haven't you? It's the old Kipling quote, isn't it? And a lot of the teams can go hot-headed. The emotion of the moment can just get the better of them.
Yeah, and I think if you do, then you give away field position and you know, worse still, you give away 3 points. And all four sides have good kickers, you know, that they will be punished if the discipline isn't right up at the top of the agenda.
Emma, a final thought from you?
I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a huge weekend of finals. Obviously, the showpiece being Saracens against Clermont. I hope that Clermont really handle the pressure and make it a huge, huge game. But I think Saracens will come away with a title.
Yeah, I think Saracens will be too strong for Clermont on Saturday. But, you know, looking to Friday as well, I think you've got two sides in Gloucester and Stad who find themselves in fairly similar predicaments. You know, some changes throughout the season, a lot of stuff going on. Two sides that want to play. Yeah, but you can't kick badly to Stade Francais, and I just think Stade will have a bit too much this weekend.
And if you're a romantic, you would want Clermont to win this weekend, wouldn't you? Because it, in a sense, no one deserves it, but they kind of do in Clermont, don't they? And they've probably actually learnt the lessons. Is it too much of a sweeping statement to say if anyone's learnt the lessons of previous heartbreak, it's probably them?
I think now is a good opportunity. The main problem being it's Saracens that are in the other changing room.
And you'll only find out if they've learnt those lessons come full-time, the full-time whistle on Saturday night. We've talked about it all the way through. Clermont are the best side never to have won this competition, and it's up to them to, however they tackle those demons, they have to do so. But as Tom says, it's Saracens on the other side, and Saracens aren't just any odd side. They're the reigning champions, and they're that for a reason.
That's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Don't forget, finals weekend at BT Murrayfield starts with the European Rugby Challenge Cup final. That's Gloucester against Stade Francais Paris, which starts at 8 p.m. local time, Friday the 12th of May. And then it is the continental climax. ASM Clermont-Auvergne against the holders Saracens in the European Rugby Champions Cup final, also at BT Murrayfield, kicking off at 5 p.m. Saturday, May the 13th. And you can watch all the action via Sky Sports, BT Sport, BN Sports, FR Dern, FR Catch. Plus, remember to go to epcrugby.com for all the stats and facts on both finals. Remember to send us your thoughts and predictions to at Champions Cup and at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter using the hashtag Champions Cup. And also on our Facebook pages, search for European Rugby Challenge Cup and European Rugby Champions Cup. Look out for the two bonus podcasts from BT Murrayfield in the run-up to finals weekend and for the EPCR European Rugby Show finals review as well. But for now, from Tom May, Emma Thurston and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.